Hey everyone, welcome back to the BME Grad Podcast. I'm Allie, my co-host is Brian, and if you haven't already, please be sure to leave us a rating and review. That really helps other folks like you find our show. Also, if you haven't already done so, be sure to check out our website, thebmegradpodcast.com, for more information about us, links to our social media and other listening platforms, and a form to get in touch with us. And just one more announcement. If you've been listening along, you probably already know that we're about to start a 2-month winter break, so we'll be back again with our next episode on January 27th. For today's episode, our guest is Lucy Herrero. Lucy and I go way back to our time at UNC. We both graduated from the Joint Department of Biomedical Engineering at UNC and NC State. And Lucy is currently a Manufacturing Science and Technology Engineer, or MSAT engineer, at Humacyte, a bioengineering company based out of Durham, North Carolina. Humacyte is pioneering the development and manufacture of off-the-shelf, universally implantable bioengineered human tissues, and it's super interesting. On this episode, we'll talk with Lucy about Humacyte, her role, and her experience and advice on searching for jobs with a student visa. Please enjoy this interesting conversation with Lucy Herrero. Hey, Lucy, it's really good to see you again. Thank you for volunteering your time, especially so close to the, in the U.S., the Thanksgiving holiday.
Thank you, Allie. I'm so happy to be here.
You and I go way back. Was I your TA or something? Or were we in like a club together? I was your TA. Okay. What was it for, junior design or senior?
Sophomore design.
Yeah, because I didn't do senior design. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sophomore design. What did we do back then? We programmed a microcontroller in that class to like circuit do a little thing. What did it do?
It was the H bridge with the circuit. And so we had to program the motor to go forward and backwards and stop. There was like a sequence or something.
Right. Did we do that in C? Because we did in C. Yeah. What did you guys do it in C?
C. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Throwback. So. Lucy was always a standout person and student, and you were involved in a bunch of research while you were at UNC studying BME as well. Is that that's right? Right? Yeah.
Yes, that's
because I remember talking to you one time, and you were like kind of in the cross between of like, do I continue on the research path or go and get a job? Mm-hmm. What was kind of fueling that thought process back then?
Well, I had done research for like the 3 years, like sophomore through senior year, and I was working at the time at a physical therapy lab where I had a lot of freedom. Honestly, I didn't have like that hierarchy of like report to the grad student or the postdoc or whatever. It was a very small lab, and so I worked directly with my PI, and that really fueled a lot of passion for like the research process. And I just felt like I really wanted to help people with my research. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, it was like, oh my God, my vision is to go to grad school. I'm going to get a PhD in this and that, and it's going to be great. And I'm going to help people with my research. And by the time that I was graduating, I was honestly just so burnt out with the pandemic and everything. I mean, I did maybe like a year and a half of online schooling, and I couldn't take one more Zoom class. I was done.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. So I was like, do I maybe want to take a break and work for a little bit and see what that is like and maybe mm-hmm. earn some money in the process and feel like I'm not burned out with academics and schooling anymore, so I can go mm-hmm. back in a couple of years? Or do I want to keep going? And ultimately, I was like, yeah, I definitely want to get a job. I actually did apply to some grad schools, but I was like, I'm going to apply to like the most top grad school programs out there. And if I get into one of them, it is a sign that I have to go to grad school, you know?
I can smell the burnout on that sentence. Yeah.
Exactly. I was like, it's this or nothing. So, you know, someone else is going to decide for me, ultimately. And it just so happened that the grad school thing didn't work out for me. And I started job searching in earnest. because I was like, I can still help people with, you know, just doing a job. I just need to find a company that is very geared towards that vision. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I decided to do. And honestly, now that I've been out of school for what, like a year and a half now, I do not want to do a PhD. Like, absolutely not. I changed my mind, which is what they always tell you. They're always like, well, you start working, you're never coming back to school. And
yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
And I'll say, like, some people do go back, right? Or it's like, it's really interesting how you can never plan it out. Like, mm-hmm. like maybe you want to go to grad school and then you try working. You're like, this is great. And then maybe as you're working, you're like, wait, I want to specialize in this. Mm-hmm. And you kind of go back to school. So, like, you know.
Right.
Maybe it's in your future. Maybe it's not. But I'm glad that you like what you do right now. That's good.
I think what happened for me was, like, I had this set vision of, like, I'm going to go to grad school and get my PhD. And this is how I'm going to develop my career.
Right.
And once I started working, I realized, like, oh, my God, I like this so much. Mm-hmm. And even some of the stuff that wasn't as technical. Because, you know, being in BME, you're used to, like, all these super technical classes and labs. And you have your senior design project and everything is, like, so engineering. And even though I was kind of in that world still, there were many projects and things that I was doing that weren't as technical. And I started to really enjoy that. And so I was like, well, maybe I do want to go to school one day, but it's not to go, like, on the super technical path that I thought was going to be what I was going to do. So there's definitely been, like, a big shift in the past, like, year and a half or so.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. You know, where are you at right now? What does your company do? What do you do? Tell us a little bit about what you're doing now.
Right, so I work at this company called Humacyte. We're located in the RTP area here in Durham. And what we do essentially is called a human acellular vessel, or HAV for short. And so this is like a blood vessel that you can implant into anybody without causing an immune response. And so basically what we do is we will culture and grow the cells, and then we're going to seed them into like a polymer scaffold. It's like a mesh with a tubular structure. And so over time, the cells start growing. They form this collagen matrix. And then we go through a decellularization process where we remove all the DNA, like everything that is like a sort of biological component that could cause an immune response later on in the human body.
Right.
And what you're left with is this tubular structure that honestly is like a spaghetti. Like, I've had the privilege of touching one, and it's nothing like you would think.
Yeah.
Is it like cooked spaghetti then? Like cooked or raw spaghetti?
Yeah, like al dente. No. Where are we at with the spaghetti? Like
spaghetti. You would think it was slimier, but it's not. It's super interesting. And so right now we have like a couple applications that we have clinical trials for, but the one we're filing for with the FDA first is going to be trauma. And so basically whenever somebody gets into an accident and they're told like, well, you know, your whatever artery got compromised, you might lose a leg, you might lose an arm, you might lose your life, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of having that be the outcome or having to use these, all these grafts that are maybe made from like some sort of polymer or they're from like a cadaver or something, you can use an HAV literally off the shelf, implanted in the body, and over time your own cells will populate the vessels and become a part of it, which is super, super cool. So we're in that part of the regenerative medicine world, and it's really exciting because at least for trauma, we're finishing a phase 3 of clinical trials. And so commercialization for us is in the near future, and it's something that we're working super hard towards now. We actually went public last year, so like we're not really a startup, but we're not really commercial yet. We're in that weird spot, you know.
So I was going to ask about that because I was reading and the company was founded in 2004.
Yeah.
And so there's a long history there. Do you know anything about that? Like kind of the progression to now?
Yeah. So actually, so the company was started by our CEO, Dr. Laura Nicholson, at Duke, like at her research lab. She used to work at Duke. And right there with like her postdoc students and then like my supervisor currently was their number one employee, like first employee ever as in like Duke undergrad student. And so that's how they started, and they've scaled up slowly, you know, going through the clinical trials. I know we did a bunch of clinical trials, like you have to test on animals first. Then we outsourced the manufacturing of the vessels somewhere else, and now we're finally at home in the heart of RTP, having gone through becoming public last year.
And so is everything now manufactured at the RTP site?
Correct. Yeah, we have a big site, and you know, we're ready to go commercial whenever the FDA lets us in a couple years.
Yeah, so I guess I have a stupid question, like how have the clinical trials been going? I'm sure that's like a really reduced way to ask that, but how have they been going? Yeah. What's that look like in terms of the commercialization timeline?
You know, trauma has been going great, and actually we got the opportunity earlier this year with, you know, everything that's been happening in Ukraine. We actually had the opportunity to send some vessels over to Ukraine for compassionate use over there, and it's been going great. Like they've been, I think maybe 5 or 6 people have them now, and it saved their lives. Like nothing could have saved their life otherwise, and these people are recovering well. It's been already a couple months, and so that shows you, like, in real time you can use this in a war zone. Right, and it's going to work, and I feel like that's really helped us in our process with the FDA as we're still wrapping up like our official clinical trials. So you know, hopefully, the timeline always shifts, right? But like, I'd want to say, like, sometime in 2024, you will find HAVs on the shelf somewhere in a hospital.
That's so exciting!
Yeah,
that is so cool. I guess like. I'm in the process of like sourcing components right now for my product, and off the shelf, like hearing that this something like this is off the shelf is like really cool to me. Like you would always think like, or I guess I always thought like something like tissue engineering or something like this would be very specific, or like maybe to the blood type or something for that immune response. But that's really cool that you can just kind of take it and mold it to the situation and for the patient and then like save a leg, right? That's really cool.
Absolutely. And I know some other of our indications that we're gonna be filing for with the FDA are like I want to say peripheral arterial disease is one of them, and the other big one is dialysis access. That's that's huge. So many people need dialysis in the US, right? So hopefully in the next few years, again, we'll see that happen.
Awesome. So I bet you don't just play around with spaghetti at work. What do you do?
Well, so I work as an MSAT engineer one. And for those who don't know, MSAT stands for Manufacturing Science and Technology. And again, because we're like a small company, but hopefully transitioning into a bigger company, we kind of do a little bit of everything. We're very much in the manufacturing side of things, so we don't really do any of the process development or R&D work. We're very much like trying to keep compliance with everything we're doing. We're the ones, if we have like a non-conformance event, something goes wrong and it's out of the procedure, we're the ones who are like assessing impact, and we're being like, so-and-so happened, so we assess all the different parameters and all of our process critical quality attributes and all these things, and we say, you know, this, yes, this will have impact, or no, and this is why. So we work really closely with like quality. We're also doing a lot of like floor support, kind of like the thing that you would see more of like a process engineer doing sometimes. So, you know, we're the ones as you know, manufacturing associates and other people from the manufacturing department are there doing the hands-on work to manufacture the HAVs. We're making sure that, you know, everything is going smoothly. We're providing support whenever it's needed. If we have like a piece of equipment that is failing or there's a problem with a component, then we might be the ones who are working alongside someone from metrology and trying to get it to work. And other than that, like I said, it's so much. We're like assessing all the data at the same time, making sure like all the trends are looking well. Mm-hmm. We're all, like, you know, in the spirit of continuous improvement, we're just trying to make the platform that we have better and more efficient. And that's always something we're struggling with because, you know, our platform is just so unique. Like the bioreactors and all the equipment that we use is really just like designed for Humacyte and by Humacyte. You don't find that anywhere else. And so it's very complex and some things are like, oh my God, we need to do this better. Like we did not design this well. And other things are like, yeah, this works great. And we have to actually like see what works well with this and apply it somewhere else.
So one, I guess I want to point out that it's interesting to me because I'm in new product development and R&D. And so we're doing mm-hmm. like the initial bits research and then we like actually develop it all. And hearing mm-hmm. that you're on the tail end of that kind of shows me like how far your company is. Two, I would like you to maybe break some misconceptions of mine. Because when I think bioengineering, I'm like thinking like wet labs and like under a hood mm-hmm. and like creating cells and stuff. But then I hear everything from my experience as like a manufacturing engineer of mm-hmm. like equipment and CQAs, like you're saying, the critical quality mm-hmm. attributes and mm-hmm. and these processes. So like I'm hearing like equipment and I'm hearing like what I apply to like medical devices, like a PCBA board or like a robotic surgical thing, but I'm thinking hoods and I'm thinking wet labs. Like what does mm-hmm. that manufacturing environment look like?
Right. So like you said, it's not like I'm in the wet lab, you know, pipetting. And
that's what I'm thinking, though.
Doing all this stuff. I think someone from like process development, like you said, or R&D, that's definitely something that they do on a daily basis. But for me, it's more like I'm using, I guess, my background in biomedical engineering, you know, all the troubleshooting, problem solving mm-hmm. background in biology and medicine and even like mechanics and physics to be like, okay, so these are the different parameters that we monitor for. If this parameter goes out of trend, how is it going to impact the other three or four, right? How can we use maybe like our knowledge in mechanics to like make this component in the equipment better? Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of also just like kind of standing there and just, I don't know, using like your problem solving skills on a daily basis and being like, okay, this went wrong. How can we improve it? How can we do it better next time? And like go in that direction. I think we're applying like many similar skills just in like very different ways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think what I'm hearing though is like, I guess it makes sense. What I'm thinking of is the research side of maybe the tissue mm-hmm. engineering and that kind of stuff. What you're doing is like the production side with, I mean, mm-hmm. everything's already developed. Everything's like automated now. So you're trying to hone in and make sure your processes aren't mm-hmm. swaying and making sure your equipment is working correctly. I guess that makes sense. Right. Yeah.
And I think something that's important for us too is like whenever process development does something, right? They're researching this new way of, I don't know, doing a media exchange or mm-hmm. maybe we want to do a feed this amount of time versus this amount of time. How is mm-hmm. that going to impact, you know, our critical quality attributes, like I said. And so we grab whatever results they have and we scale them up.
Yeah.
And we like apply whatever knowledge, we like essentially do like a tech transfer of mm-hmm. like whatever they came up with, how do we apply that on the manufacturing floor and make sure that we are still complying with all the regulations that we have to comply for? Because I think when you're doing R&D and you're doing process development, you don't really think about quality. On the floor in the manufacturing space, you're like, no, this is the product that is going to go into a person. Mm-hmm. And you have to make sure that you're ensuring like sterility is being maintained. Like every single thing you do, you have to keep that in mind and you have to make sure that you're compliant, basically. Like you're compliant, like that's it. And I think I never thought of that as I was like so into research back in my undergrad. And now that I'm on the side of the manufacturing type of things, it's like, it's so interesting because there's all these rules that you have to kind of like follow, but that just, I feel like that just makes it more exciting in a way.
Yeah, the challenge is definitely there.
Yeah.
So what was the role you were in at Humacyte before your current role?
Yeah, so actually when I was job searching, like I said, I knew I wasn't doing my grad school anymore. And so because research was all I knew, I was like, oh, I really want like a position in R&D or in process development or something like that. And it didn't work out that way. Ultimately, by the end, I was like, I will take anything. I just want to put my foot in the door.
Right.
And like, we can only go up from there, right? And especially if it's a company that I feel like I really like and that we value the same things. And that's what I felt with Humacyte. They, at the very core, they want to help people.
Right.
And they're very special about their culture and the people who work for them and, you know, the product that we're making. And so I was like, this, I want to work here no matter what. And so I didn't care what position I was going to start with. I didn't care if it was R&D or in manufacturing or whatever it was. I knew that, you know, everything is an opportunity to learn, even if it's not what you expected. And so the position that they had open at the time was for a manufacturing associate. And that's basically, you know, being very hands-on in the manufacturing space, manufacturing the HAVs. And so I was like, you know, this will be give me a good chance to learn because this is such a unique platform. Like,
right.
I feel like very little of my schooling prepared me for this. Right? Like, yes, you have your background information, like from your science classes. And yes, you have like your soft skills, but nothing could prepare you for this. And so it was, I think, like, it was a great opportunity for me to understand firsthand how we manufacture this and what it takes. Like, what is the smallest human error you can make that will like cause like a catastrophic event, right?
Yes.
Like, you have to know those things. And if you didn't do that like firsthand, it's hard to visualize and understand, especially if you're like fresh out of college. And so I think it was a great opportunity for me to do that. And as well as, you know, when I started, we were still in COVID, like still in the pandemic, right? So there weren't a lot of people in the company and there wasn't much going on. I don't think we were manufacturing anything at the time because one of our batches will take months. Like, we're growing a vessel, like that takes a while. So, I think because of some reason, we just weren't manufacturing over the summer when I started. And so, even though I had all these procedures to learn and like training to do, that wasn't taking up much of my time. And so, I would go to the manufacturing director and I'd be like, give me something to do.
Right.
What can I do? Right. Like, I even if it's like sweeping the floor, I'll do it. I don't care.
God,
the best floor sweeper.
Hard worker.
I know, she's the best.
And so he was like, sure. And he was like, let's just grab this recent college grad who doesn't know anything and put her in one of the hardest projects in the company right now. And so what started as like a small side project just to like help out in my free time actually became a monster of a project that only recently finished up until like what, like 2 months ago or something.
Wow.
So it took over a year to like put this project and bring it into effect. And so it was like an awesome opportunity for me because while I was still, you know, manufacturing the HAVs on the floor and getting great mentorship, I was also on the side whenever I wasn't doing that, working on this project. I was gaining a lot of like visibility with people from different departments. I was learning so much about the company because this project did not only encompass like the manufacturing department, but it encompassed everything. It encompassed like, you know, MSAT where I'm currently working, and automation, facilities, metrology, like pretty much almost every single department that has something to do with manufacturing,
right,
in the company. And so that was like an amazing opportunity for me to learn, and that's what ultimately led me to the position that I am in currently. About 6 months after I started, a position opened up in MSAT for an engineer one. There was like some stuff with my visa that I had to figure out, and a manufacturing associate position actually does not require like a bachelor's degree. And that was a requirement for the visa that I have. And so I was like, well, let me just make this jump to MSAT. Mm-hmm. And it ended up working great.
Could you explain that a little bit more? Because I've never gone through the visa process. So what do you mean by like it? The one you were in, the first role you were in, didn't require a bachelor's degree.
So I am an international, or I guess I was an international student. I'm originally from Costa Rica, born and raised. And so I came to UNC with something that's called like an F1 visa.
Mm-hmm.
And so after you graduate as a STEM major, you get the opportunity to have work authorization for 3 years, pretty much. And so that, of course, has its own requirements. One of them being that you have to have a position in your field that requires at the least a bachelor's degree.
Okay.
Especially, that's not a requirement for the work authorization itself, but if you're looking towards getting sponsorship for a work visa, say like an H-1B, and stay in the U.S. for longer working at that company, that is a requirement. Like whatever job that you're holding that this the company is sponsoring you for needs at the least a bachelor's degree. And so that wasn't the case with my original position. And I, of course, was looking to grow and continue learning in other departments. And so making that shift to an MSAT engineer one was like exactly what I needed in several aspects, not only the visa.
Gotcha.
Yeah. How the H-1B visa works, it's a lottery pretty much, and it happens every year.
Yeah.
And so as someone who has a work authorization for 3 years, you get 3 tries, right? The thing is, you can go into the lottery unless you meet that requirement that I just talked about. And so it was kind of like, if we wanted to get me into the lottery for that first year, I needed a job that met that requirement.
Right.
And so I had talked with my manager a lot about that, and they were like, we're hopefully going to open so-and-so position inside the department that you can like grow into next year.
Right.
But there wasn't like, there wasn't any guarantee, right? Because it all ties in with the budget, and like they have no control over that. And so it was like good timing, I guess. So I was just like, looking at the careers page, and I was like, wait, what? This thing opened up? And I know Humacyte has this policy that you can't change positions until you've been in the company for 6 months, like internally. And so it was like perfect timing, like me hitting that 6 month mark and this position becoming open. And it just so happened like, oh, well, if I do this now, we still have lots of time left before the lottery window opens.
Yeah, meant to be. So do you have your H-1B? Do you have your H-1B now?
No, that lottery didn't work out for me.
That's so stressful. Do you have any thoughts on that for maybe folks going through a similar situation? I'm sure that can be really stressful, and you're trying to align like all these logistics with also your passion and career goals, which is like just a challenge that, I don't know, it's really a privilege to not have to deal with that. So do you have advice for students and professionals going through that process and what to do there?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I was becoming more and more desperate in my job search process, because I was seeing, you know, all my fellow BME students post on LinkedIn and being like, I just accepted this position and so, and really as an international student, sometimes when you're filling out this online application, and I don't know, maybe you've seen it too, if we were searching, job searching in the past, and they would have this question. It's like, do you require sponsorship, or do you, can you legally work in the United States or whatever? And, and so that sometimes counts as a filter. And so if you don't have the right networking and the right contacts, you're going to get filtered out, and you're basically essentially just sending out your job application into the void, and you're never going to hear from it again until maybe like a couple of months later you get a reply and it's like, yeah, you were not selected for this. So I think my advice would be, first, don't choose something just because, like, in your desperation, don't choose the first thing that comes to you just because it's what you have. Actually, after I accepted my offer at Humacyte, I started getting like a lot of other opportunities show up, and I was just like, well, I already got this, but thank you so much. So, you know, just trust yourself, trust the process, and like have patience, and it's going to work out. And I think ultimately what made a difference for me was like leveraging your network. And I think that's true for anybody going through the job searching process. Like, you're much more likely to get a job faster or get a job period if you're using your contacts and your networking, you know, to get like your foot in the door somewhere. And for me, it was just like, okay, I know I really like this company, Humacyte. And I told Colleen from the BME department, and she was like, oh, here's actually, this is the email address, and the recruiter let me introduce you to her. And so that was kind of like my way in. And I was so persistent, so persistent with this recruiter. And I feel like my passion really showed through, that eventually it just worked out.
Good for you.
So yeah. So I would say for sure, like, make the effort to network, use your resources, either like from alumni or friends, family, or just like the resources from your department, and make sure you're talking to the right people instead of just like, I don't know, filling out 10 job applications a day because that makes you feel productive. That's gonna get you nowhere.
Yeah, and I'm really glad it worked out for you so far. I think this advice is really applicable to other people as well, not just like international students, right? Like, these are some good advice. I would say, like, we have some other episodes as well on our podcast of like resume building or networking, and kind of on the networking, like what you said. I like the deeper relationships you were building. I heard it at a panel once. It was while, you know, Colleen set it up. It was at UNC, NC State. Someone gave the advice of, instead of drill, like if you're drilling for oil, you don't want to drill like 10-foot holes, like 10,000 10-foot holes. You want to drill like 8-10,000 foot holes. And so it was good advice of like, you know, following up and making sure you're building those relationships. But it was really good to talk to you today. I think from a bioengineering side, which I've never seen before, this was really interesting. I'm glad you're doing well and you're enjoying your role here, so I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, Lucy, it's so good to see you again. I've always like thought you were so amazing and so smart, and like it shows in this conversation, but you also just like always like outworked everybody. And so I just can't wait to see like how you grow in your career. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Allie.
And thank you, as always, for listening to the BME Grad Podcast. We hope you subscribe to our show and leave a review wherever you're listening. Be sure to follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube, and get links to all of our social media, listening platforms, and more information on us at thebmegradpodcast.com. See you next time.